For many of us, the natural beauty of Wisconsin is kind of one of the best things, isn't it, about living here? And there are so many wonderful native plant species to enjoy, but it doesn't take a whole lot to throw the ecosystems out of balance when invasive species arrive and start to take over. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Our guests work very hard to monitor and control the spread of invasive species in our state. And with June being Invasive Species Month, great time to find out about those efforts. Thomas Booz, Tom's the Forestry Invasive Plant Coordinator for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Tom, great to have you back.
It's great to be back, Larry.
Appreciate it very much. And Kelly Kearns, a longtime guest on the show, Invasive Plant Coordinator with the Endangered Resources Program for the DNR. Kelly, always a pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
We have lots we can talk about. This is Invasive Species Awareness Month, and I guess the purpose is to awareness, isn't it, Tom?
Yeah, that's exactly it. The Wisconsin Invasive Species Council, it was in 2003, I believe, wanted to have more awareness, and so we started the Invasive Species Awareness Month, and lots of great activities have come from that over the last 10 years.
Huh? Yeah. Just yesterday, we had the award ceremony where people were nominated as Invader Crusaders. And so we had a number of people and organizations that get these awards every year. And so we had five award winners yesterday, along with kids who did a poster contest. We had over 400 kids submit posters for an invasive species awareness poster contest. And right now, they're up in the Capitol, in the state Capitol, in the Rotunda.
Oh, very cool. I've been in on judging a few contests like that, and they're a lot of fun to judge, to be perfectly honest. And sometimes very difficult to do it. How do invasive plants get here? I mean, is it people, birds, some combination?
Well, most of the plants that are invasive in North America are things that are native to Europe and Asia. Okay. And so they typically have been brought over either intentionally for food or medicine or ornamentals, and then have spread once they've been used. Sometimes they come over accidentally, like, mm-hmm. you know, in hay or whatever kind of products might come over. But typically it's an intentional introduction.
And they really do cause, I mean, let's take a look at what top two or three or four invasives, what are the most common ones here in the state?
Well, probably the one most people are familiar with is garlic mustard in Wisconsin, in that it's a herbaceous plant that is blooming this time of year and starting to go to seed and really common in understory of forest. And so that one is probably the most common one that people have to deal with.
Yeah. I was in Florida last week, and kudzu is something down there I'm glad we don't have here.
Well, we don't know that we have it. There have been populations found in Evanston, Illinois, which is just south of the border, and in Ontario.
Oh.
So it's definitely possible we could have it.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you're the bearer of bad news there. I hope we don't. That's for sure. Maggie in Appleton has a question for you. Hi, Maggie.
Hi. One of my very nice neighbors thought she was planting a head, and what she planted was buckthorn. And we live on a ravine, and it's now crawling up my hill that I have been working really hard to renaturalize with native plants. I have used I cut it all the way to the ground, and then I used industrialized vinegar. I have dug it out. I have now taken to cutting it off and painting it with Roundup because we do live in a naturalized area and I don't want to round up anything, but I'm at a loss. And it's still coming. What do I do?
Yeah, that's a hard one. Tom?
Yeah, there's a lot you can do, but the vinegar option is definitely not a good one with buckthorn. It's much too nasty and hardy of a plant. So the Roundup is a good option. Cutting it down, treating the stump with that mixture, I'll just verify that you're using the correct active ingredient that's specified on the label for such trees.
Okay. And that you're treating it at the right away?
Right away, yeah. The key with herbicide application, there's two types, basically a water-soluble one and an oil-based one. The water-soluble ones, like Roundup, needs to be applied right away to that stump, whereas if you use an oil-based one, you can do it at any time after.
No, I'm doing it right away. I cut it, and then I've been treating it with the Roundup.
Yeah, and as far as if the seedlings are really easy to pull when they're small, if they're a foot to 2 feet tall, you can just pull them right out of the ground. What's probably happened is you're having the seed bank regenerating itself as you open up some soil. Seeds are coming in, or the seeds are generating, or they're coming in from neighboring properties. So it's just a matter of keeping on it, and it might take you a few years to stay on top of it.
Is your neighbor trying to get rid of it now, too, I hope?
Unfortunately not. So it's going to be an ongoing battle, I think. To her, it's still a hedge, even though a couple of neighbors are trying to convince her that it is an unwise hedge. So we'll see. But thank you. I appreciate it. At least I know I'm on the right track.
All right. Good luck, Maggie. Thank you for calling. So, Invasive Species Awareness Month, you'd hope Maggie's neighbor would be listening today.
Yeah.
Okay, I hope so. Jim in Hastings, Minnesota, your turn. Hi, Jim. Jim, are you there? Okay, well, let's go to
hello?
Jim, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was hoping your panelists there might help me with a native, what I call invasive species, bush, or if left, it'll get to be a tree size. When it gets mature, as in mature, I'm talking, probably 3 inches in diameter. It'll actually produce a red, dark berry type fruit. And
what do the leaves look like?
Well, I would say elliptical or teardrop. And when the thing is a seedling, it has a four leaf structure like a four leaf clover, but the leaves aren't shaped like a four leaf clover. It's more like a teardrop shape.
And did you say you know this as a native species?
It is definitely a native species.
And how do you know that?
I know that because I've owned the property for some 30 years, and I pretty much did not pay a whole bunch of attention to it prior to it just really getting out of hand. It has tubular. I'm stumbling with the term here. It has runners like you would not believe, and if left unchecked, a small bush with less than a half inch in diameter, it will literally send out plants even at that small size.
Jim, do you have a photo that you can put up on our Facebook page?
No, I don't. But here's the only other. The bark on this thing is kind of a taupe color, and if you touch any of the branches that aren't currently sprouting leaves, it is like a thorn, and I mean it is really sharp and brittle. It'll break off. It'll literally embed yourself in the literally in your skin.
Wow. Well, Tom, any ideas here?
I really don't. I'm curious now with that description, and it would be great if you could take some photographs for us and send it to us.
Sure. Yeah, I would hope. Could you possibly take a stab at what you think the left unchecked, the most invasive species possible that you can think of in a bush, and just take a guess? And the other thing, if we can't identify it, could you help me with trying to eradicate this other than with a broad pick? That's what I've been doing, digging out the roots.
Well, let's think. One of the things that might possibly be is prickly ash. Prickly ash has
prickly
a very
ash,
distinctive I'm, citrus
it's
smell
not
to
prickly
it.
Prickly ash, ma'am. I know prickly ash.
Well, then we're really at a loss here. Without, frankly, I think Jim, we're at a loss because we can't identify it without a photo. Now to get
but in
rid
general
of it,
for control, For most clonal shrubs, which it sounds like you're describing, something that's shrubby and it spreads by underground roots, you're going to need to kill every single stem in order to kill it. If you allow any of the stems to stay alive, then they will just feed the root system. So you need to identify the entire clone, and you need to go in the fall and cut back each of those, and similar to the buckthorn, do a cut stump treatment of either glyphosate, which is Roundup, or a triclopyr, which is a brush killer, and apply that at the cut stump rate to each of those stems, and you know, doing it just like with a very fine spray or with a brush, something like that. Otherwise, you could possibly do a basal bark application of a herbicide in oil. Or you could possibly spray it, but generally it's that cut stem application that works best on clonal shrubs like this.
Yeah. So good. Tom, you're going to add something?
Yeah, it really is important to know what the plant is, because if it is indeed a native plant, it may be serving a function in your woods that you don't want to give up on, or there's another reason why it's taken over, some type of disturbance that you may want to try to address. So it's really critical to understand what it is that you have, and we can certainly help it if you'd be willing to send some photographs to us.
So send some photos in, and I suppose you could send directly to you. It might be the easiest to do. Do you have an email address or something that we could?
Yeah, it's really easy. It's thomas.booz, so it's B as in boy, O-O-S, at WI.gov.
Oh, thomas.booz at wi.gov.
Yep.
Or you can also send them to invasive.species at wi.gov.
Right.
So any invasive species question can go there.
Okay. And with a good photo, you should be able to, you know, I'm confident it's going to be identified.
Right.
If you can do that, Jim. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Taking a look at invasive plants today with our guests, Thomas Booz and Kelly Kearns from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up a little later on in the program, we're going to take a look at Wisconsin herpetiles, our amphibians and our snakes and amphibians. It's going to be a lot of fun as we talk with a couple of other representatives from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. But right now, we are into invasive plants. You can join in. The lines are all full now, but the number is 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post a photo or a question on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Tom in Madison up next. Hi, Tom. Thank you for calling.
Hello. I have a wooded backyard, and it's full of garlic mustard. Ideally, what I'd like is to know some benign native species that I could plant as a ground cover to overcome the garlic mustard. Otherwise, I do not want to use a harsh chemical. Are there non-harsh chemicals if I can't have a good native ground cover?
I think you might be able to have a good native ground cover after you get rid of the garlic mustard. That may be a way to think about it, Kelly.
Yeah, there's very few native plants that can really overcome garlic mustard. They would, first of all, they would have to be tall enough that it would be higher than the garlic mustard so that it could outcompete it by shading. And we really don't have anything that fits that. That if we did, then we wouldn't have the garlic mustard problem that we'd have. So jewel weed is really probably the only thing that really comes close to doing that. And then you have just a heavy, heavy woods full of jewel weed.
Yeah.
But there, you know, if you can hand pull it, that's going to be the best for, you know, getting rid of a small area without using chemicals. And I guess it depends on what you mean by a harsh chemical. You know, there's certainly Roundup or glyphosate is something that does kill all green plants, and so that's harsh in that way, but it doesn't persist in the environment as much as something like 2,4-D does, which, you know, persists a little bit longer and has a little bit more toxicity to humans and mammals. So vinegar, what somebody mentioned earlier, could maybe be effective if you get it really early on. not usually used very often. The other thing you might want to consider is early in the season when you have seedlings is using a propane torch and killing those seedlings with the torch. It's not going to kill the adult plants for the most part, but it could go after the seedlings and knock them out.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thank you very much for calling, Tom. Appreciate it. And John in Richland County, your turn. Hi, John.
Good afternoon, Senator. I own quite a bit of land.
Okay.
And the logging roads came in, and they logged it out, and so I have invasive species. But the county forester told me it looks like a little privet without the white leaves. And how close am I supposed to cut it to the ground before I put Roundup on it?
Okay.
Just a couple of inches. I mean, there's the closer the better, but I think anywhere from 0 to 6 inches is going to work.
So if you can get in there with a mower, you're gonna do it that way, or what are you going to do?
Well, I have to walk the land. I'm in Cooley Country out here in Richland County.
All right.
There's like 300-400 plants of these, and they shoot up 20 stems.
That's just a short afternoon.
Yeah. Yeah, so anywhere from 0 to 6 inches or 1 to 6 inches.
Yeah, if it's with multiple stems shrubs, it's important to just get every stem to make sure that
it's every one of them.
Yep, absolutely. Good luck, John. Thank you for calling. We have Terry in Green Bay up next. Hi, Terry.
Yes, good morning. My problem is with that old common honeysuckle. And first, I'd like to ask a question. What is a common term, or you know, like a common name of that honeysuckle, without getting into the Latin?
Honeysuckle, or bush honeysuckle,
or Eurasian bush honeysuckle. Yeah.
Okay. My question is, I mean, it's gotten out of control out here. It's just nasty. Can I do any damage to the plant by spraying the foliage at this time of the year with Roundup?
Probably not as much as you would do by either pulling it out or by doing a cut stump treatment. It's really not it's not a real effective way to get the herbicide into the root system. The nice thing about honeysuckles is they have a very shallow root system. So if you can figure out a way of pulling them out by looping a rope around the base or using chains or something like that, they're relatively easy to get out of the ground, especially if the ground is moist.
Yes, that's what I've been doing.
Yeah.
But it's just really gotten out of control, terribly.
Yeah.
Well, keep at it.
Yeah, that's the only persistence pays in this case.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Victor in Sheboygan emailed us, why aren't there stricter laws against selling certain perennials and shrubs, you know, invasive species in Wisconsin?
Well, we do have some laws against that, and a lot of people aren't familiar with our laws. It's called NR40, which is the Invasive Species Control Rule, and it has certain species that are listed as prohibited and others listed as restricted. And for all of those species, if they're regulated, you can't buy them, sell them, or plant them or transport them. With the prohibited species, they're ones that if they show up anywhere in the state, these would be things like kudzu that you mentioned earlier, we want to try to get rid of them. Restricted species are more things like buckthorn and honeysuckle and garlic mustard that are too abundant to require people to get rid of them, but they're not allowed to plant that, to buy them or plant them.
You can. The other follow-up question or another question, did quackgrass thrive in last year's drought? It seems so in my garden, at least, Victor in Sheboygan says.
I'm not real sure about that. There certainly are a number of species that are doing really well this year because of whatever happened last year, because of a lot of rain that we've had this year.
Yeah, Kelly and I are not turf people, but I definitely have seen a lot of healthy, happy quackgrass since the drought. And especially in poorer soils, it seems like to be one of the few things that is healthy.
Taking a look at Wisconsin's invasive plants today with Tom Booz and Kelly Kearns of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. We finally have open lines. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mehler Show Facebook page. You can post a question or a photo there. Love to hear from you. Richard in Manitowoc, your turn. Hi, Richard.
Yes, good morning.
Morning.
I'll just say, one phrase to you, Creeping Charlie.
Oh, yeah. Well, that...
What kind of site is it in?
It's around the place, just the Creeping Charlie.
Is it in your grass or in your garden beds or what?
Well, it's in my lawn in the front. We've had daisies and all that stuff here. It's sort of a wild yard.
Yeah.
And well, I don't want to kill everything else around here. And I've seen it in a farmyard and in the woods next to a farm. So I know it isn't always just low to the ground.
No, it can get pretty long. So if you have it in just grass, then there are herbicides that can work to kill it without killing the grass. There's it's typically sold as a Trimec, so it's 2,4-D and 2,4-5-T, and you can get it at garden centers. But it will kill any of the other dicotyledonous plants, the what you would consider the flowering plants, like the daisies or whatever else you might have. So if you don't want to use an herbicide like that, another possibility is borax. It's the kind of borax that you get for laundry detergent, and you can mix that up and spray it, but it does also cause boron poisoning in toxicity in the soil, so it's not really good for the soil long term. Otherwise, hand pulling, raking, or just learn to live with it.
Yeah, and if it's a borax, you have to be very careful about the application because you can kill your whole lawn. So I think the University of Iowa has recommendations for using borax if you use it. You know, the other thing I did with a previous lawn that we had, my 7-year-old daughter at the time and I would go out on the lawn and just lay on the lawn and start pulling, and we'd go through. And it's surprising how much you can get in just in a half hour's time. We'd have these piles. And frankly, it takes, if the grass is growing healthy, we were able to kind of get rid of a lot of it just by hand pulling it.
Yeah, I've challenged the neighbor kids to see who can bring me the longest vine. And it lasts for about 15 minutes, but you can get a lot done in 15 minutes. So they come running over with a 3-foot section, you know, and like, look at this one, look at this one. And so it was fun.
Well, it was really... kind of fun to be out there with my daughter doing that. Richard, thanks for calling. Good luck. Appreciate it. Pat in Sturgeon Bay, I believe. Pat, hi.
Hi. I'm getting quite an education today. This is really a good show. But I do have some honeysuckle in my yard, and I didn't know up until now that this was an invasive species. And I was thinking of propagating it and covering up a fence line we have in the backyard by transplanting some of it. Should I do that, or should I just hands off, leave it alone?
Well, it depends on what honeysuckle species you have. We do have some native honeysuckle species, but they tend to be very short shrubs or very, not very vigorous vines. The honeysuckles that are invasive here right now are large bush honeysuckles, and they get into they get big. They get like 6, 8, 10 feet tall. And there also is a vining honeysuckle called Japanese honeysuckle that's also extremely invasive further south, but it's starting to move this way. So all of those are illegal to transplant. And so that would not be a good idea for you to do that. And if you have the native ones, they're not really going to do a great job of covering up your fence line because they're going to be too small.
Yeah.
There's plenty of other native shrubs you could use.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. These are the big ones, so they're probably invasive, and I'm just going to forget about that.
I would get rid of them.
That's the best advice. Just get rid of them.
Off to the nursery. I think I'll spend some money and get something decent.
All right, Pat. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. All right. We got Pat in the right direction. What about Linda? Hi, Linda in Spring Green.
Yeah, crown vetch. There's a whole bunch of it in the side of the hill. We've done some construction. The bulldozers moved it around. They then seeded it with where they moved the dirt. It's been seeded with wildflowers, and it's beautiful with the wildflowers, but the crown vetch is popping up all over the place. I'm digging it out the best I can as I see it, but is there
any other way of doing this, or is this going to be a lifetime activity for me?
Well, unfortunately, crown vetch has seeds that, like a lot of the legumes, that have a very long dormancy. So they could be germinating still 20, 30 years from now. So unfortunately.
It depends on how old you are, if it's a lifetime or not.
Right. So, yeah, crown vetch is tough. And because, you know, once it produces those seeds, then they're just going to keep coming up. And killing the roots is also a bit challenging. There are a couple of herbicides that are effective for that are specific to legumes. And so Transline is one specifically that works on legumes, but it also kills any of the things in the goldenrod or, you know, the family that asters and those things are in. And so you have to be really careful where you're using it. Milestone and Escort are also herbicides that can be used for those. But again, they kill some other species too. So hand pulling is maybe the best you can do if it's mixed in with a lot of other species.
And cutting the flowers off before they go to seed.
Yeah, or pulling.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, sorry. Thanks for calling. Mike and Endeavor, hello to you.
How are you doing?
Great. Thank you for calling.
I've got a lot of stinging nettles around my property, and I've been able to control parts of it with weed whacking and using Roundup. But a lot of it is in a wetland area and down by the stream, and I haven't used any Roundup near that area. I'm wondering, will that contaminate the water system around, or?
Yeah, for applying herbicides in or near water, there's aquatic approved herbicides. So the Roundup instance, the Rodeo is the aquatic approved version of that, which is less impactful to water systems.
Okay. And that's something you can use.
And every year it seems to come back. I kill it and it just keeps coming back. Is there something I can do to the soil so that it stops coming back? Or
unlikely, you know, because you're on a stream, you're going to have the disturbance of flooding, and that's what brings in stinging nettles. That's its preferred habitat, is those streams that flood periodically. It's a disturbance-oriented species, and the seeds are just going to keep coming in. So using, you know, something to whack it down every year might be effective, a brush saw or, you know, a weed whacker of some sort is another way to go with it.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate the call. Pat and Mazamani, we are on to you now. Hi, Pat. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. I'm wondering if you can tell me if you have any recommendations for townships that have people that mow the roadside. We've noticed since we've planted a prairie that the roadside mowing brings in tons and tons and tons of really invasive plants. And I just wonder if you have any recommendations about it or any thoughts about it. And I'll hang up. Thanks.
All right. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling.
Well, there's lots of thoughts on that. 3-4 years ago, the department, along with lots of partners, primarily the Council on Forestry, developed some best management practices for rights of ways. One of the biggest issues that was addressed in those best management practices is the timing of the mowing. And Kelly and I and others have been very active in trying to provide as much outreach and information as we can to the people that are actually doing the mowing to time it to not spread the invasive species. Basically mowing before they set seed so you're not dragging those seeds down that right of way. So in your situation, it's tough because you might have 4, 5, 6, 7 different invasives that are moving down the right of way, and you don't know. You would have to prioritize when to mow to get them all before they go to seed. Parsnip is one of the most prolific spreaders because it's kind of a more fibrous stem. It produces seeds right at the time that is typically mowing time. And that's why it's kind of spread like mad across the southern part of the state and further north now, unfortunately. But so what I would do is identify the ones that you feel are the biggest threat to your area, and then just talk to the town mower and see if they can't do something to adjust their mowing times. I mean, they should all be aware of this because we've worked with the Department of Transportation, who's since worked with the county mowing crews. they've all heard it. The towns are becoming more aware of it as they become more connected with our outreach efforts.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you for calling. And help in identifying? Is there, I mean, you know, if she has photos or can you get an expert there to look or what?
Well, it sounds like she may already know what a lot of these species are, but certainly you could go to the Department of Natural Resources Invasive Species website, and we have photographs of most of the problem species on our website.
Actually,
there.
Pretty good photos to be.
Yeah.
Very good ones.
And that's a good time to plug something. So because Invasive Species Awareness Month is June, each week we're having a different feature page on the front page of our website. So last week was in terrestrial invasive plants. This week is aquatics, is that feature. But there's a button on the main page or the guy that's coming up out of the water, and he's just covered in milfoil, it looks like. And so you can go there, and that'll link to all the information that you need.
And are there some events that are going on for Invasive Species Awareness Month?
There's a lot of events happening around the state that various local groups are putting on, especially weed control projects and some outreach events. So we actually do have a calendar that people can go to. And
yeah, it's the Wisconsin Invasive Species Council website, and that's simply invasivespecies.wi.gov. And there's a calendar of events, and we always are adding to that. Yeah. And we want you to help us add to that. So the goal is to, if someone's interested in helping out for a weekend because they're free for some crazy reason, they go to that website, the calendar, and they find something locally that they can go volunteer for.
Excellent. And Luke in Madeline Island, hello.
Hello.
How are things on Madeline Island?
Beautiful. Everything's finely green. The late spring up here. Jesus. I was listening to your guys' show, and someone, I think his name was Jim, was asking for help identifying a plant species, and everything that I heard made it sound like choke cherries, which aren't technically invasive, but they will take over, just like you said. And, because I just planted about 45 of them, so...
You may be sorry in that case. No, most of the things he said could apply to chokecherry. So maybe good for Jim, if he's still listening, to look that up and see
if that fits
his description.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you, Luke.
Thank you.
Thanks, Luke.
No problem.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Chokecherries. Now on to Tom in Hale's Corner. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Great show. Thank you. My question is about pampas grass, or I think it's called Phragmites. And is it taking the place of the cattails, the invasive cattails? And how deep are the roots, and can you burn it out?
Kelly, this is kind of a favorite of yours in a way to talk about.
Well, pampas grass actually is a different species than Phragmites. It's really more of a problem in places like California. So that's really not the issue here. But Phragmites is the correct name for it. And it is abundant on the Lake Michigan shore and moving inland from there, and especially on lake shores, river edges, and other wet places. And generally what we have is probably the invasive Phragmites, where it's acting really aggressively. It would be the invasive one, and it forms very dense stands that are very difficult to get rid of. Generally, hand pulling is not going to be effective. To dig it out, you would probably need some kind of machinery, like a front end loader, and dig down at least a foot or two in order to get most of those roots up, and then you still might not get it all. So that's a pretty destructive way of dealing with it. Most people, if they have a small enough population, one of the best ways to control it that we do a lot in our natural areas is you grab you take a string in your arms and you grab a bundle with it, and you wrap the string around the bundle, and then you come in with like hedge trimmers, cut the tops off, and then apply an herbicide to that top so that it gets down into the roots of that plant. And that can be a pretty effective, very targeted means of control.
Mm. Yeah, and as far as it's spreading, it will pretty much outcompete everything. I mean, it'll outcompete the non-native K cattails, which are very aggressive, and you'll have a sea of Phragmites. As the evidence in the Green Bay area.
Lots of acres. Good luck, Tom. Thank you for calling. And Barb in McQuantico, hello to you.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I know there's an invasive yellow iris that's predominantly a wetland species, but I have a yellow iris in my garden, and I'm trying to convert everything over to native species. And I thought I heard once that there was no such thing as a native yellow iris. And I'm wondering if you know if that's true.
That's correct.
Okay, so what I have is non-native?
Correct.
Yep.
Okay. And that's it. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. So we got a commenter on my Facebook page from the folks at the UW Extension, the Learning Store. They've posted links on our Facebook page to publications on garlic mustard and honeysuckle and getting rid of them. So that's always a good thing. And, of course, on your website, you have all kinds of information as well.
Yeah, the way to find that on our website is if you go to the DNR webpage and type in invasive species and then go to order, and you can order publications. And we actually have a catalog of all the publications for aquatic species and all the publications for terrestrial species. And there's quite a bit there.
Tom and Kelly, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you,
Larry.
We are fortunate to have been talking today with Thomas Booz, who is the forestry invasive plant coordinator for the Wisconsin DNR, and Kelly Kearns is the plant conservation program manager with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, with the Natural Heritage Conservation Program within DNR. So great to have them along, and I'm sure they'll be back. It's always good to stay informed on topics like invasive species. Really takes constant vigilance, doesn't it, to make sure that our native species aren't squeezed out of their habitats. Coming up next, we're going to talk about some of the most fascinating creatures that live in Wisconsin, the many species of reptiles and amphibians that call our state home. So I hope you'll stay tuned. That's coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.